Good morning, everyone. I call this meeting of the House Veteran and Military Affairs Division for March 4th, 2026 to order. I see that we have a quorum. Representative Ray Rauer, can you lead us with the Pledge of Allegiance?
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation under God, indivisible, liberty and justice for all.
First item on the agenda is approval of the minutes. Representative Hill, have you had a chance to look at the minutes?
I have. I moved their passage.
Representative Hill, motions to approve the minutes. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries. Minutes are approved. First presentation today is from Meals on Wheels, and I believe we have Mr. Collins and Mr. Rowan who are here to testify. So welcome to committee. Please identify yourselves for the record and proceed with the testimony.
Chair Zhang, members of the committee, my name is Pat Rowan. I'm the executive director of Metro Meals on Wheels. This is my colleague, Dave Collins. In 2023, this committee allocated $1,080,000 to provide veterans home-delivered meals in the metro area. Thank you for that. I'm here today to update you on the status of that grant. Since the launch of the project, we've been able to serve 82,129 meals to over 500 veterans. Veterans like Carter Drake, who spoke in this committee last year. Carter cited the availability of Meals on Wheels as the primary reason for eating healthier and giving relief to his wife, his primary caregiver. This program runs with the utmost integrity. Potential recipients are referred to Meals on Wheels through County Veterans Services Service officers and partner organizations like MACV. Once their eligibility is determined, i.e. the individual is not eligible for any other program, Metro Meals on Wheels collects personal information and the DD-214 and submits that to the VA for verification. Once their veteran status is verified, service can begin. Meals on Wheels then generates service reports at the end of each month listing the name and number of meals for each veteran. Reports are then submitted to the VA for verification and reimbursement. While this project took some time to get off the ground, we were consistently serving over 5,000 meals a month to nearly 300 veterans, a few in their 20s and 30s, and folks aging all the way up to 104 years old. With the extension of the grant period, our service to veterans continues to date, but we recognize that we could not continue at last year's pace. Fortunately, we did receive some extra funding from the Minnesota Board on Aging, expanding eligibility, and were able to transfer some recipients to that program, but not enough to keep the veterans program solvent through 2027. In order to make the funds last as long as possible, we have reduced the maximum number of meals to 5 per week and stopped enrolling new veterans in the program in July of 2025. As of January 31st, we are serving 168 veterans, 5 meals per week. At this pace, we will run out of funds in July. While we are working to secure additional funds through the Older Americans Act and general fundraising, we fear that we will have to terminate service for veterans in July. If there's any way possible, we urge this committee to commit additional funding this session so we can continue to serve those vulnerable veterans that have served this country. I'm happy to take any questions or turn it over to my colleague.
Go ahead, Mr. Collins.
Chair, I'm sorry.
Whoever testify next.
Dave Colling, I'm a community partnership and a contract manager at Metro Meals on Wheels. I just wanted to add a little bit to what Patrick was saying. It was wonderful to be able to get those funds, those rollover dollars that we were not able to spend last year. But of course, we were spending at a pace last year, thinking we would get down to zero. We didn't. But we weren't able to ramp it up fast enough. It's been a great program. We've had a lot of veterans that we've been moving over to other programs when they've become eligible, either through new fundraising efforts or funds that have come in through mostly the Older Americans Act, which are federal dollars. But what's been interesting is a lot of those veterans have frankly refused those dollars. They feel it's a handout, and they really but for the veterans program, the money's coming from the VA, that feels something like they've earned that because they have. And it's so it's not only have we been trying to move folks over, but you know, being able to keep this program going for a lot of veterans will mean, you know, means a lot to not just the nutrition, but especially some of the younger veterans we're working with. It's that daily visit and making sure that they're you know, going to the doctor, whatever it may be. It's a lot of the same things that we do with older Americans and seniors in our neighborhood.
Any member questions, discussions? Representative Olson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. When you were here last year, the years before, my primary concern has always been that this money is designated purely for veterans who don't qualify for any other purpose whatsoever. I understand, being a soldier myself, the concept of not wanting a handout from the government, but also the concept that if they take what they've earned or eligible for over in this hand, that alleviates a hand over here for another veteran to take something that they have also earned. But my questions are here. You're saying that some of these individuals are in their 20s and 30s. Can you provide for me a little bit of a better understanding of how we're finding these individuals, what qualifications they are? You know, I'm 35. Would I qualify for Meals on Wheels in my current situation? What is kind of that parameter of need?
Mr. Collins or Mr. Rowan?
Yeah, the qualifications, basically, we have to meet one of three things. You would probably not fit those. I can't speak to your personal situation, but one is age, so folks that are over the age of 60. The other is food insecure. The other is any kind of physical or mental issue that's keeping them from either shopping or cooking or whatever it may be. So those are where we're seeing, those last two are where we're seeing a lot of the younger folks that fall into that category. And to your point there about where are they coming from, where they're being referred from, many of those are coming from MACV. Some of them are living in hotels or motels as part of a homeless program. Others are coming to us through the County Veterans Service Offices. And even a couple have come in from VA hospital. We've had referrals from those folks. And again, that's going back to that ramp up that it took to get there. It was because the program was brand new. It's really the first of its kind. You know, is getting all those folks, and again, I'm sure you know much more than we do, all the people that are connected to those services to let them know we exist and what we can provide.
Representative Wilson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So then my last question would be, the veteran who is 104 years old that you're serving, does that person not qualify for extra dollars over in this left hand, whereas they were using veteran dollars for that?
Mr. Collins.
Yes and no. So we clarified that with the Minnesota VA. So they technically qualify for Older Americans Act dollars, but we didn't have any space. So there was no eligibility for those individuals. As Patrick mentioned, in September, not to get too deep into it, in September there was funds that were unspent the previous year of Older American dollars that rolled in. And that's why we got some extra dollars in September. We were able to put some of those veterans into that program. Again, because once they were qualified, you know, we wanted to make sure we weren't, you know, breaking any rules with our contract and when getting those folks involved and into the Older Americans Act dollars. And we were hopeful to do that again this year. We didn't receive any cuts in our Older Americans Act, but we didn't receive any extra funds at all this time. So I think you have a graphs in front of you, and you can see those dollars, and you can see right after June how it kind of drops a bit when we stopped enrollment and went to five meals a week. And then again, you see a kind of a larger jump in September and October, a drop. And that again was when those Older Americans Act dollars came in.
Representative Olson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Last thing. I'm really excited about this concept of ensuring that these are the veterans who are getting it and they don't qualify for anything else. I can be a huge advocate for something like this if I have a little bit, if there's an email or something to the extent of which, you know, confidentiality can make it. If you can get me that information, to then I can just know for a fact that this is good money being spent in a good way for good people who have earned it and served our nation, and then I can be in support of something like this continuing.
Well, I could certainly get to you not only our, I'm sorry, our who we work with at the VA, but I could, you know, again show you our contracts and give you more detailed information on. And literally, I can, you know, we can use our veteran ID number, so there's no names involved. That's what we use with the VA, of where folks have, you know, where they were, where they went back. We can actually follow those funds, those individuals, and how they moved.
Representative Olson?
I would love that. If you can send that to me, I would greatly appreciate it and can help advocate for you guys.
Thank you, sir.
Representative Feist.
I was going to ask kind of the same question, so you asked it in more detail. I was just wanting, I remember that that was a question that we had discussed last time that you were here regarding kind of the order of your funding and how you ensure that these dollars are spent on veterans as intended by this committee. So that I was going to say basically the same thing, but thank you for the important work you do in the community and for veterans.
Any further discussion? Go ahead, Mr. Rowan.
Chair Zhang, members of the committee, thank you. I just wanted to add one detail to that. With that, we did expect, or we were on pace to run out of funding in April of this year. With that additional Older Americans Act money and moving folks over, we were able to extend that into July. So that's the kind of impact that that constant monitoring has on the program.
Any further discussions before we move to the next item? Seeing none, gentlemen, thank you very much for being here today and for the work that you all do.
Thank you. Have a great day.
Next on the agenda is House File 3919. I move that House File 3919 be referred to the Transportation Finance and Policy Committee. Representative Cha, to your bill. Welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Chair Sean. Members of the Veterans Committee, I'm Representative Cha, and I'm here to present you 3919. Last year, we passed a bill to create a task force in the veterans at the MDVA, and the task force met over this break. We had eight really well-rounded discussion, discussing about qualifications and criteria with the Deputy Commissioner and Chair Pa of the task force. I'm here to present 3919, as we have made some recommendations in regards to the qualifications for SGU veterans and irregular forces serving the Secret War Laos from 1961 to 75. I'm not sure if the Deputy Commissioner is here.
I see John, Mr. Kelly.
Mr. There. Kelly. Yeah. And with that, I'm going to turn over to Mr. Kelly to explain to you the agreements and benefits that we agreed to. Thank you.
Welcome to the committee, sir. Please identify yourself for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Thank you, Chair and members. For the record, John Kelly, Director of Government Affairs for the Minnesota Department of Veterans Affairs. The bill before you, House File 3919, is reflective of the language that is in the task force report. That was submitted to the legislature in early February. That it also encompasses the technical recommendations section of the report that recommended some of the benefits that were on the list of benefits for these SGU veterans as the bill was passed in the 2025 session. Through the discussions and through our implementation, didn't really make sense as benefits. So the Honor and Remember flag, for example, is a program for a flag to be flown on public buildings. It's not really meant to be an individual benefit. Also, there was language, there's a benefit in there that mostly relates to recently separated service members having some licensing exemptions for their car and for their business, you know, whatever professional license they may have that doesn't apply to SGU veterans. So there's also language in the bill that adds the SGU veterans into Minnesota statutes 197.237, which is our burial fees section of law. So the USDVA fund authorized the burial of SGU veterans and National Guard veterans in state cemeteries, but they did not provide any funding for that burial. And so this would add in the burial fee to cover the cost of burial. There's still a question of the cost of the headstone. If a spouse and eligible dependent or eligible dependent is buried in a Minnesota veteran cemetery or in a federal cemetery like Fort Snelling, their information is placed on the rear of the veteran's headstone. And so that is not a cost that we currently have in 237 sub 9. So we need to address that. But that is, you know, the summary of the bill. It's basically the task force language and recommendations, the department's technical recommendations, and some practical updates to allow for the cost of the burial to be covered for the SGU veterans if they choose to be buried in a state veteran cemetery. And with that, I can turn it back over to Representative Cha or Stan for any questions.
Yes, I do have a testifier. He didn't sign up, but he is here. If you would allow. Thank you. Mr. Tin Yang, can you approach?
Welcome to the committee. Please identify yourself for the record and you may proceed.
Too Young. Good morning, Mr. Chair, and good morning, committee members. Thank you for the opportunity to testify in support of HF 3919. My name is Tu Young. I am a retired U.S. Army Lieutenant Colonel. I served 28 years on active duty with the Army Medical Department as a pharmacy officer, 67 Echo. I have been deployed to both OIF and OEF. I have the privilege and honor of serving as a member of the Veterans of Special Force Guerrilla Unit and Irregular Force in Laos Advisory Task Force. I serve as a member in the role of a Hmong American Minnesota resident who served in the United States Armed Forces. I have the privilege and honor of working alongside the other task force member to develop protocols and criteria. I believe the task force has accomplished its mission and as mandated by the Minnesota Law 2025. Therefore, I strongly support HF 3919 with one exception. The exception in HF number 3919 is in Section 1, Sub D 15, the veteran designations, and under 3, SGU veteran. The SGU veteran designation on the driver license create two distinct classes of veteran, regular veteran and SGU veteran. I did not recall the task force recommending two classes of veteran designation on the driver's license. Having two classes of veteran SGU and the veteran will incur additional related costs for the Minnesota Department of Public Safety budget, including upgrading the computer software to accommodate an additional designation. Therefore, I highly recommend amending HF 3919 to remove SGU veteran designation from the Minnesota driver license and use only veteran designation for all qualified veteran. This change will incur no additional cost to the Department of Public Safety budget. Removing the SGU veteran designation will also be consistent with the task force recommendation. As a Hmong refugee from Laos and the son of an SGU officer and a veteran from the great state of Minnesota, I proudly support HF 3919, except as noted. Once again, thank you for the opportunity to testify.
Representative Chow, do you have any other testifiers?
This just one, thank you.
I see Mr. Morris from the Council on Asian Pacific Consultants.
Chair Zhang, Chair Bliss, and members of the Veterans and Military Affairs Division, good morning, and thank you for the opportunity to testify on House File 3919. For the record, my name is Andy Morris, and I serve as the Legislative and Public Affairs Director for the Council on Asian Pacific Minnesotans. The Council, a nonpartisan, non-cabinet executive branch agency, was established to advise state government on issues related to Asian and Pacific Islander Minnesotans. It was founded in 1985 in no small part as a response to the arrival of large numbers of refugees from Southeast Asia, primarily Cambodia, Laos, and Vietnam, following the end of the Vietnam War in 1975. Last year, 2025, was a milestone for our refugee-experienced community as we marked 50 years since the end of the Vietnam War and the beginning of a journey towards freedom that continues to this day. This refugee experience community includes those with roots in Laos, such as the Hmong, Lao, Thai Dam, Lu Meng, Khmu, Lu, and others. These arrivals post-Vietnam War included many
who fought
in support of
I'll pause you there for a second, Mr. Morris. Whoever has your phone on, can you please turn it off, please? Thank you. Proceed.
Thank you. These arrivals post-Vietnam War included many who fought in support of the U.S. secret war in Laos during the Vietnam War, specifically the Lao Hmong Special Guerrilla Units and the Forces Armée Royale of Military Region 2, under the command of Major General Vang Pao in northeastern Laos. The Council thanks the 2025 legislature for the inclusive language, recognize the valor and sacrifices of veterans from across these different ethnic ancestries. These brave soldiers fought for the sovereignty of Laos, and they defended U.S. interests in the face of communist aggression in Southeast Asia, especially in South Vietnam. Many lost their lives in that conflict, but their actions saved the lives of countless American soldiers. Since the end of the Vietnam War and the U.S. secret war in Laos, and following the arrival of those communities in the United States and Minnesota, we have lost many veterans of the secret war and continue to lose more each year. Therefore, it is imperative that the legislature act now to adopt the recommendations of the task force, especially to allow consideration by those who do not fall under the automatic or standard criterion for eligibility and will need to navigate the special consideration process. Adopting the recommendations will allow those still with us to justly earn benefits and extend the dignity that goes alongside state recognition to those veterans. Thank you again for the opportunity to testify this morning.
Is there anyone from the public who would like to testify? Please proceed. Good. Welcome to the committee. Please identify yourself for the record and proceed.
Sure. My name is Scott Walker. I'm the member of the task force, and I'm also the founder and special projects director of the Coalition of Afghan and Vietnam War Veterans. I represent a coalition of U.S. veterans, CIA case officers, special forces, MACV, Cambodian, Lao, Hmong, and Vietnamese, and Afghan interpreters that served with us in both the Vietnam
Proceed.
Thank you. And the secret war in Laos. As a member of the task force, we discussed a number of things. My team in Washington, D.C., who happens to be a former case officer.
Whoever has a phone, I'm going to ask you to leave this hearing room.
Okay.
Proceed, Mr. Walker.
Who also was a information specialist with the Department of DEA, the remainder of his career. What we found and what we researched on this particular bill, and there's some serious ambiguities within the law that prevented me from understanding exactly what I was doing and how I was identifying certain individuals. We haven't got time to go into all of the details, but we presented two reports to the committee or to the task force that was not taken in consideration, not officially entered into the record, and I have now entered those into the record as written testimony to this committee. I would implore you all to read those, that report and that information. Without your knowledge of what's in those reports, you may be making a big mistake on what you pass here. The omission of other allies that fought in the secret war has been omitted from Minnesota. And I would encourage you to rethink that and be sure that we include everyone that fought in Laos under the secret war. The Hmong are not the only ones that fought in Laos during the secret war. And to omit these other people is a travesty and a real injustice. So I would implore you to read my testimony, that's written testimony. You can go online, and if it's too long for you to read, we have it under Speechify so you can listen to it. I found it's much, much easier to listen to it than it is to read it all. The effort that our team has put in this particular issue is profound, and I would hope that you would respect that and be better informed of what you're about to enact. So with that, thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Walker. Any more members of the public who would like to testify on the bill before we proceed with member discussions? Seeing none, Chair Pliss.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. If Mr. Kelly could come up, I have a question for him. And Mr. Kelly, on the burial fees numbers you had provided the committee, there's an ongoing cost, and it seems rather high. And if you look at the law that we passed, subdivision 9, line 2.11 to 2.15, says the Commissioner of Veterans Affairs shall establish a fee schedule which may be adjusted from time to time for the interment of eligible spouses and dependent children. No plot or interment fees may charge. Are we covering the cost? I thought in the law that we passed, there's going to be a fee schedule created for the veterans as well. Is that not correct,
Mr. Kelly?
Chair. So, in the bill, we add SGU veterans to the current burial fee statute. So they would be charged the same burial fee as spouses and eligible dependents of veterans. The spouse and eligible dependent fee in sub 9 is something that we adjust following the CPI and will go up over time as costs increase, but at a tracked level. We're not creating a separate fee schedule for the SGU veterans. We added them into sub 9.
Chair Bliss.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Chair. And that was just something that I had misunderstood. So I see that now. Thank you.
Mr. Kelly, any further discussion? Representative Mary Frances Clark.
I actually have a question for Mr. Walker. That's appropriate. Thank you. Just looking for clarification. Okay. Sure. Last year, I presented a lot of bills that were focused on Black veterans, and I heard that veterans don't see, race, creed, whatever. So my question to you is, with the current proposal having the designation on the driver's license, does that create a separate defined category for benefits, and would it have any adverse implications by having that designation, or what is the purpose for that?
Mr. Walker?
My understanding is many of my veterans that I associate with do not qualify for that designation at all. We have MGU, we have MACV, hatchet teams. We have a numerous amount of people that served in Laos during the Vietnam War. SGU is most commonly referred to as General Vang Pao's the Secret Army, Special Guerrilla Units, and those Special Guerrilla Units that fought in the lower part of Laos, who are regular Lao. There's three designations of Lao in Laos. We have the Highland Lao, the Midland Lao, and the Lowland Lao. All of our legislation has been directed to the Highland Lao, which is predominantly Hmong. Everyone else has been omitted. And so we have a subnational population of these other ethnic groups here in Minnesota. And we would encourage you to learn more about the secret war, the research that we've done, the first-hand accounts that we can present to you. And like I said, I have three former CIA case officers that trained and worked side by side by all of these Lao and Cambodian and Vietnamese. Their expertise has been, they made application to the task force, but they were not rejected because they live out of town. And I would encourage you to learn more about the Cambodian role that they played in Laos. I think the Vietnamese role is quite significant. We moved a number of missions into North Vietnam through Laos. So it's not well known that the Vietnamese had Opland 34 commandos that did secret work in North Vietnam that operated out of Laos in order to get logistically to get into North Vietnam. They've been completely ignored. The MACV hatchet teams and the Cambodians that served on those hatchet teams, completely ignored. So the testimony that I have, that I've written, I'd really like you to read that. It gives you a much, much better picture of what happened in Laos. And there's too much to go through right now. So thank you.
Representative Lardy?
Okay. Just to simplify, I don't understand why we need that designation. It doesn't make sense to me, and it just seems like at a later point, or maybe now, because I don't know all the laws within, that it might have an adverse implication. And I don't know if a veteran's a veteran, it should just be a veteran. My dad was a veteran, my brothers were veterans, I love veterans, and I'm just trying to make sure that there's no problem that we're building by adding those three letters on there.
I can,
Mr. Walker.
I'm sorry. I can share this with you. The term veteran, of course, applies to all veterans, United States veterans. That was the original. My understanding is the original intent of putting that on the driver's license. The SGU has been able to put SGU on it, which is a designation. But I think what my experience has been in the last 20 years that I've been working with these communities is there are certain veterans that want equal status as American veterans. Okay, they feel as if that they fought for the United States, which is a misnomer. They did not, and so that has come into common historical conversation. And so again, much of this is introduced into our testimony. I encourage you to do that. I think many would like to be equal to a U.S. veteran. Eventually, everybody wanted medical benefits, and they wanted compensation for their role in Laos. And this is another part of that effort to be equalized as a U.S. veteran. They were not. They knew that. The United States knew that. We were brothers in arms fighting for a similar cause. But they did not work for us. We did not work for them. It was a symbiotic relation to combat communism in Southeast Asia. So I could be here all day with you, but that's basically what my understanding of it is.
Representative Clardy.
Hopefully that answers your question.
It doesn't, but I'll come back at a later point. Thank you.
Representative XP Lee.
Thank you, Chair. Just to follow up real quick, you know, I too am still learning a lot about the secret war. When you said it was a partnership and it wasn't, the SGUs were not fighting for the United States. I mean, definitely they weren't part of the main branch army or any of the military forces. The CIA operatives that went in and connected with, you know, the General Vang Pao and the other folks at that time. Based on your understanding, you're sharing that there was no for the U.S. In that relationship, correct?
I am.
Just want to be clear.
I am.
Mr. Walker.
Yes, just to be clear, among the Lao, we're fighting on behalf of Laos and for the King of Laos. The United States was fighting. They were not fighting with the Lao. They were directing leading the Lao in this effort. We had our interests. The Kingdom of Laos had their interests. And we came together as brothers in arms, together to fight communism. Just to make another point, if General Vang Pao was here today, he would not qualify to be recognized under this law. He was not an SGU soldier. He was a regular Lao Armed Forces general who commanded special guerrilla units and regular Lao Armed Forces. Our T-28 pilots here do not qualify under this law, because they were regular Lao officers and Air Force pilots. They were not SGU. So these designations have got to be better cleared. You have to understand a little bit better of what we're doing. There's a lot of information out there that's erroneous. And we have the experts that are living today, that lived it, that fought with these guys, that directed these guys, that led these guys, that trained these guys. And what is in the public record now is much information. So,
Representative XP Lee.
Thank you, Chair. You know, that's good to hear from you. Again, like I said, I've got a lot more to learn. What I was told was that, you know, General Vang Pao had great conversations with the CIA operatives, and that, you know, one of the reasons why we as in like the Hmong refugees who decided to come to the United States, were in part, you know, quote unquote, told that the United States would take care of us. And I mean, I understand now, right, as an adult, because I learned this when my dad told me about the story when I was a child, that there's nuances, right, to what that means. Thank you for that clarification today. Again, I definitely still have a lot more to learn. And I hope that we can continue to, you know, work together be able to, I think, for me, move this forward in consideration of everyone. I understand that there's, you know, there was more than just the SCU soldiers. You know, with all the work that's been done at this point, I think we can also use the opportunities in the future to highlight and educate others of the others forces that were involved similarly in similar fashion to the SGUs and add them to this section that then will then already have been created. So thank you, Chair.
Representative Ryan.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I want to talk a little bit about the SGU. And I saw that Mr. Kelly wanted to mention something earlier. Do you want to clarify something real quick, or
You can go ahead, Representative Hockey.
Okay. So the understanding for the SGU designation on the driver's license was because we have a separate statute for SGU veterans in itself, and then we have a separate veteran, or like separate veteran statute as a whole. So there was a belief that there might be a little bit of muddy in the water, confusing a lot more people in regards to the difference of the statutes. So that was the whole issue with the SGU veteran status on the driver's license and who they were fighting for, and you know the separations of the units, I think is pretty crucial here, because we're not trying to take away from what they did for the United States. We're not trying to diminish them their service or any way. It's just the fact that there's a separate statute for U.S. veteran, and there's a separate statute for SGU veteran for now. So it was just the combination is where there was a little bit of concern to that. So I don't know if Mr. Kelly has anything else that he would like to follow up with that on, or
Mr. Kelly?
Mr. Chair, members, so my point of clarification was for the committee around the committee, the task force work, and who is a veteran or what unit they served in the Secret War. So I want to remind the committee, the task force was the Special Guerrilla Unit and Irregular Forces in Laos. It is not specific to Hmong. It is not specific to SGU. It is all irregular forces. During the course of the task force, we heard from the National Cemetery Administration, from the U.S. Department of Veterans Affairs. The main differentiation is not what your unit was called. It is if you operated from a base in Laos. So I also would like to make a few points of clarification based on Mr. Walker's testimony. As we presented a few weeks ago in committee, on the department's website, there are recordings of every task force meeting, live video audio recordings. There are detailed meeting summaries. There are materials that were presented in the meetings. If there's something that's not on the website, or something that, you know, especially the analysis of Mr. Walker's organization, it is because the task force voted to not include it, including on the task force members from Mr. Walker's organization that are veterans who served either in a training capacity or in the Secret War supporting this work through special operations or U.S. military special operations. We had 8 meetings. We heard from experts. We went through this over and over again. And we also entered into the record in the December meeting a response from our general counsel's office clarifying and pointing out inconsistencies in the analysis of eligibility and the other issues that Mr. Walker's organization had with the corresponding federal laws. We are following a process here that mirrors the NCA's process. We have built into this process, nested into it, the federal process. This bill before you today is a state supplement to an existing federal benefit. The Congress of the United States and this legislature has afforded these veterans over here a great honor. Only one other type of organization has been afforded this honor to be buried in U.S. Veterans Cemetery, and those are Philippine scouts during World War II. So again, there's a process from NCA. We brought in NCA. We're following the NCA process. We're adding on some other benefits here, but we had a fair and transparent process. We had committee votes or task force votes on what was in the record, what wasn't in the record. And even if it's not in the record, we've posted on our department website the full unedited committee hearing for each task force meeting. And, you know, Representative Cha, Representative Duran can add in, they were both there for all of the meetings. But I just want to clarify here that we tried to come up with a set of recommendations that is something that mirrors what the feds are doing, that is as clear as possible, and that provides both a federal approval process and a state approval process. And we feel like we gave the legislature a set of recommendations. And as the commissioner said in his opening part of the report, these recommendations are not final. The way this law is designed, this language was meant to go back to the legislature to finalize the benefits, and the legislature is using its prerogative to put some finer points on this legislation. So I don't, you know, we had 8 meetings of this type of discussion. I just want to be clear as we see it. The language is clear. Our general counsel has made it clear. This is not just for SGU. It is not just for Hmong. It is for any irregular force or SGU that operated from a base in Laos. If they can prove it, either to the NCA or to the commissioner through the special consideration process, then they will be deemed eligible. If they cannot, then they will not. And I think, you know, I just wanted to be clear about what went on this interim and what's in the report. And I'll stop there.
Thank you, Mr. Kelly, and thank you for sharing my exact thoughts. Representative Cha.
Thank you, Chair. Thank you, Mr. Kelly, for the clarification. There were 13 members on this task force put together by the MDVA. There's only 3 people on this task force that were not veterans, okay? That was me, Representative Cha, Senator Pa, and Mr. Scott Walker. The other 10 members were all veterans. Of the 10 members, 3 of them serve in the Secret War of Laos. 3 serve in the Secret War of Laos, 10 were veterans. We had thorough discussion over 8 meetings. We had expertise, testimonies. We voted as the Task Force Council to omit and to record relevant information. I applaud the cooperation. I applaud Mr. Duran for being on this council and the learnings that all of us had obtained. There's a report by the MDVA on their website. Shell, you should seek more information. I'm going to yield a few minutes to Lieutenant Retired Colonel Yang here to respond. Thank you.
Identify yourself again for the record and proceed. Members, we have a few other bills, so I would like to move this bill to the next committee, if possible, because I still have Representative Ray Rauer and Chair Bliss who want to have discussions too. So proceed.
State your name. Lieutenant Colonel Retired Tu Yang. I just want to respond to Mr. Scott Walker's that stated that the U.S. and the Hmong SGU or all the irregular force in Laos were partnership. I think that's not true. The SGU and the irregular force were directly funded by the United States CIA. Every dollar, all the salary, I could only speak to MR2, Military Region 2, which is controlled by General Wang Pao, which is where my father served as a SGU officers under him. There, it's to say that there's it's a partnership, that means that all the command and control would be under separate. However, every battle, every operation must be approved by the CIA and goes back to the ambassador of Laos in Vientiane to approve. Every bombing mission has to come from the ambassador and the CIA has to request it. Most of the battle that are fought in MR2 are led by case officer. They plan, coordinate it, and directly involve in the fighting. So therefore, and plus and additionally, all the monthly salary, everything's are coming from the United States. The Lao government does not provide any salary. Therefore, to say that the SGU and irregular force are partnership, that's not true. The regular irregular force and the SGU are the proxy soldier of the United States. They fought under the direct supervision, pay. So that's my, I would disagree with Mr. Walker. Thank you.
Thank you, Lieutenant Colonel. Chair Bliss.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Couple of things. Thank you, Mr. Kelly and Chow. This was a big lift for you guys, and I appreciate the product that's come out of it. I do want to address Representative Clardy's question. I know, but Representative Duran's already done it. We, Chair Zhang and I, had lots of discussions on this, and I felt it was important that these gentlemen back here got recognition. The lift was immense to get that. There's a lot of pushback to put them under the definition of veteran of the United States, which is 197.447. However, in our discussions, we were able to go and create a separate statute for SGU veterans of the Secret War of Laos, and that's 197.448. So they are two separate statutory designations. And the designation on the driver's license, I think, is important to separate. If we can, there's a huge cost right now, and I'm going to ask that we hold off changing that for a little bit. I've got to call the Department of Public Safety and find out why that cost is so large. I've got a 32-year career in IT. You could hire a programmer for at least a year on that cost, so I don't understand that cost.
They can hire you.
I've been out for a while. I'm old. So anyway, that's the reason. In my opinion, it's a point of discussion for the SGU vets as well. They see that on a license. What is an SGU vet? Well, let me tell you what an SGU vet is, and it's an opportunity to tell the story. So that's kind of why we did it that way. It was required. So that's all I have. Thank you.
Representative Weybrower.
Thank you so much, Chair Zhang. With respect to everybody, I feel that the simple fact here is that a separate designation is not necessary. We really should have had a quick hearing here to honor the sacrifices made in service to our country by our Hmong and Laotian neighbors. And now it's getting bogged down. It's causing waste, it's causing red tape, and there's just no reason for these veterans to be named something different. What we know is separate but equal has never been equal, and it really just isn't necessary to be separate. If this extra designation remains on the driver's license, then House File 3919 have to make an additional stop in Transportation Committee. It could potentially get held up there. This takes the process longer. We have an estimate on these fees that will be accrued while altering contracts with existing providers, redesigning application forms. So I don't see that there's a public benefit to spending these additional dollars just to have a separate designation. So, I mean, that's my question, and maybe it's a rhetorical question, but is there a public benefit to spending potentially over $100,000 on a separate designation on a driver's license?
Mr. Kelly?
Mr. Chair, Madam Vice Chair, so that provision is not part of the task force recommendations. That is a purview of the Department of Public Safety. I'm not going to speak for the Department of Public Safety to the cost. I will reiterate what Commissioner Lindsay said at the top of the report. The task force recommendations are exactly that, recommendations. The legislature is exercising its prerogative to put finer points on this law as it moves through the process. This bill was designed to come back to the legislature, and as far as we see it, this is the process that's, you know, our role at MDVA as tasked by the legislature was to stand up this task force, to get a set of recommendations, and to return that report to the legislature so that they could take action. We do not have a position on whether or not the language should be one way or the other. I will say to Chair Bliss's point and to, you know, to folks on both sides of this, there is a separate designation for SGU veteran in law, and there's a U.S. veteran designation in law. And so the argument here that before us today is whether or not there should be two different designations on the driver's license. That is, in our opinion as the department, the determination of the folks that have election certificates. So we stand ready to implement this law as soon as it's passed, in whatever form it's passed.
Representative Raybauer?
Well, thank you for clearing that up. Yeah, you're correct. We need to make that decision as legislators. Thank you.
Closing comments, Representative Chai.
Chair, can I have a request to acknowledge the SGU veterans in the room?
You sure can.
Thank you. Ladies and gentlemen of the committee, we have here the SGU veterans from the Secret War of Laos, many of whom are retired and are, you know, have been here with us on this bill. I want to recognize the 35 authors of this bill, including the 24 from my GOP colleagues and the members on the left side of this dais, along with my colleagues. In the audience here is the SGU veterans, and could I please thank you. Ladies and gentlemen, this bill is going to serve these gentlemen on the left to me right here. They are awaiting our execution of this bill to bring them honor, restore their dignity, and recognize them, to take them from the shadow into the light. I thank you all. Thank you to the MDVA, Mr. Kelly, along with Deputy Commissioner and Commissioner of the MDA. And thank you, and I will continue to work with this as Representative Rand and Chair Bliss to make sure that we do the right thing. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Cha. I renew my motion that House File 3919 be referred to the Transportation Finance and Policy Committee. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion carries. The bill is going to the Transport Committee. Thank you, Representative Cha. Next is House File 3647, Representative Ray Rauer. Representative Rao, to your bill. I will make. Okay, we're not moving this bill. We're just going to
lay it over.
Okay, we're laying over. All right, to your bill, Representative Ray Rao. House File 3647.
Okay. Thank you, Chair. So House File 3467, its goal is to provide a clear statutory authority for the Minnesota Department of Veterans Affairs, or MDVA, to collaborate with other organizations that support our state's veterans. It's not moving money in any way. I want to make sure that it's clear to everybody that we're not spending dollars from this committee. We're not moving money in any way. This bill is specifically to allow the agency to provide some staff time and support as they're able to do so. Their staff can help with problem solving and provide programmatic expertise. So there's currently various sections in Chapter 196 that can be interpreted to allow for these types of partnerships, but the agency is seeking to update in this bill to make it very clear. Specifically, this bill amends Statute 196.22 to clarify the ability of the commissioner to direct staff and non-monetary resources to assist in initiatives related to food insecurity, homelessness, suicide prevention, and other critical issues. Recently, the Disabled American Veterans, or DAV, wanted to create a food pantry network, and MDVA was able to find a partner for funding this. They wanted to build off of the Lutheran Social Services Corps program and the Meals on Wheels program that we already have. And currently, we have food pantries that serve the Minneapolis VA, but they wanted to have a more statewide program. MDVA found that they have some space in the Hastings DOMS that they could use for this, and it could potentially, we don't know yet, even lead to work therapy for the veterans that live there, assisting with packing boxes and things like that. MDVA would like to be able to support this initiative with some staff time and just by sharing their expertise. eventually this would be a fully DAV program, but MDVA wants to help it get going. There's also a reporting requirement within this bill to the leaders of our veterans committees in the Senate and the House here about any agency activities that would occur under this new section of law. Finally, it's really important to note that this is permissive, not a requirement. So if MDVA did not have the staff time or other priorities required the staff time, then they simply don't do it. I'm joined by two testifiers today. John Kelly is MDVA's Director of Government Affairs. Stephen Whitehead is the adjutant of Minnesota's Disabled American Veterans, a former national commander of the DAV, and Command Sergeant Major of the Minnesota Army National Guard. Thank you.
Welcome to committee. Please state your name for the record and proceed.
Thank you, Chair and members. For the record, my name is John Kelly, and I serve as the Director of Government Affairs for the Minnesota Department of Veterans Affairs. I want to thank Representative Rierauer for carrying this bill and for the committee for taking the time to hear it this morning. As mentioned by Representative Rierauer, House File 3467 is a policy bill that provides clear statutory authority for the Department of Veterans Affairs to collaborate with organizations that serve our veterans. This is a bill that came through discussions with our general counsel. They asked that we try to get some just easy, direct, clear authority for us to collaborate with veterans organizations, not monetarily, but through staff time and through potential use of our space. So this is us coming to the legislature and asking for the okay to do this, as we see staff time and space in our homes and other facilities as a taxpayer resource as well. I want to reiterate, just as Representative Rierauer did, this is not giving the commissioner any ability to move dollars. This is us being able to not have to have three meetings to find where in 196 through 198 we have the authority to partner on an initiative that is maybe something that's happening quickly. We also feel like in a time of tight fiscal resources, if we can lend our expertise and our network and connections to help something get off the ground that others are working on without having to come to the legislature and ask for money or have them ask for money, if we can put folks together and connect them to solve a problem, we want to do that, and that's what we're doing here. But we want to make sure that we are getting clear authority from the legislature to do that. So this is about expediency and about us being able to kind of adapt to the changing environment of veterans organizations in the state while we're here, and on the initiative that you heard from Adjutant Whitehead, is with the DAV. There are a lot of other veterans organizations in the state that aren't congressionally chartered, that are focused on other issues, and our statutes really don't contemplate partnerships much with entities that aren't the congressionally chartered veterans organizations. So we wanted to put this into the commissioner's authority. Again, it's permissive. It's not moving any dollars. If this was about moving dollars, this would be a budget change item, and this also is not something that we would be seeking to bring before the legislature, because that's not the prerogative of the agency. So just want to kind of make sure we're staying in our left and right limits and not having to have a bunch of meetings to figure out where we can point to. In the what you'll hear from Adjutant Whitehead shortly, we went and got an executive order from the governor, which also is a challenging process to get through. And so we just want, if we're trying to feed some vets and we're trying to just connect up the money with the muscle, we want to be able to do that and have clear authority from the legislature. So that's what this bill is. And with that, I'll turn it over to Butch.
Welcome to committee. Please identify yourself for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, fellow representatives. Thank you, Representative, for bringing this bill forward. As noted, my name is Stephen Whitehead. I am currently the Department Adjutant for the Disabled American Veterans of Minnesota. I've been in this role for 14 years. The DAV found one of the biggest initiatives right now or needs for veterans is food insecurity. You guys have all heard it. It was a great testimony this morning from Meals on Wheels. We know the importance of that. What I'm here to highlight is kind of the progress of the DAV and why we took this initiative on. We just celebrated 100 years of existence here in Minnesota. At the department, we established programs that serve veterans across all of Minnesota, not just in one designated area. We have 32 chapters that are made up across all the state of Minnesota, over 19,000 members, taking care of veterans and their families in their local area. Back in 2021, the DAV Minnesota had a conversation with the Minneapolis VA Medical Center about establishing a food pantry and obviously the need for veterans to get food. And obviously the VA sees veterans every day. They have over 100,000 veterans they see annually. It was a great way to kind of say, hey, how big of a need is there? The DAV Minnesota Foundation gave a grant to the Minneapolis VA Medical Center of $50,000 to kind of get this off the ground. The federal VA said this is a priority, however, did not give any funding to the VA facilities to start this initiative. DAV Minnesota, being a nonprofit ourselves, we do our own independent fundraising. We have our own ways to find our funds. We took this initiative on head on and said, hey, let's help these veterans with food insecurity. Since its inception, they are averaging 300 boxes given out a month to veterans. Every third Tuesday of the month, they have a food pantry that they hand up. And about 7:30, 8 o'clock in the morning, veterans are lining up when that door opens at 9 o'clock. Well, that's great for Minneapolis and the veterans that are being served there. The DAV of Minnesota saw this as a big need across the state. We started talking to MDVA, and this is when we ran into this roadblock about what their capabilities are. We are not asking any funding from the commissioner. This was, hey, we would like to use your expertise, your staff, to know where these veterans are and actually be able to dial in to make sure that we're hitting the areas of higher need right away so we can address this. Veterans Day of 2025, the governor did do the proclamation, which we are very thankful for. We thought we'd cross a hurdle. Unfortunately, that hurdle just opened up a few more worms. So we started working with MDVA, and we actually asked for something like this to be established to allow the DAV the time to work and ask MDV if they have the capability to assist us as we build this program. The DAV just met yesterday, our executive leadership met yesterday, and we're ready to roll this out. We are now we're still doing research. Obviously, research is always going to be important. We're now in the development phase. We're identifying, okay, where is the next pop-up going to be? How are we going to get the food? We actually have identified other partners in the state that will help us also with the funding of buying food. But the piece about what we're so interested about is so not just one thing about stopping getting food. We want to have all resources there that day when that veteran shows up to get the box of food. How else can we help them? What else do you need? So partnering with MDVA, bringing in their team, bringing in the county veteran service officers, bringing in VA staff. So at that day, it's not the, here's your box, go in your vehicle, see you later, bye, see you in a couple weeks. Having them sit down and say, what else can we do? Are you getting your benefits? Are you having issues with your benefits? Are you getting any, do you know of other resources that you may be eligible for through the state programs that we find a lot of our veterans aren't aware of all the benefits they have earned that they're eligible for? So it's an educational piece with this as well that we want to take advantage of. So with this bill, it will allow us, my team, to reach out to the commissioner and say, hey, can we have a task force built to assist making sure that we roll this out the right way and we don't fall short of our goal, and that is serving as many veterans here in the state of Minnesota as we can. Some of the barriers that we see, and I'll be transparent, and that is, how do we verify these are veterans? You know, unfortunately, in the state of Minnesota and nationwide, we have a lot of people that need, it's not just veterans that need food, right? That's the partnership that we're looking at when we have this set up, either having a county veteran service officer there, somebody from the state, and or somebody that can verify this piece, showing their VA medical card, whatever it may be, having those things in place to ensure that we're helping the right veterans and we're not putting barriers in front of them. Well, you're here last month, you can't get any this month. We need to give it somebody else. But at the same time, as our goal is to ensure that they're not relying on this for the rest of their life, that we're helping them get through this challenge in their life and getting the help that they need so they actually are stable and able to do this, you know, by themselves in the future. So this is a long program. As I said earlier, we're 100 years. Our programs, we don't start them just to stop them in a couple of years. We're looking at this as a need long-term for the future. And unfortunately, you know, I'm sad to say this, I feel food insecurity will be here for a long time. You know, I can go down a lot of different rabbit holes, why my reasoning is there, but I will just say that's our belief at the DAV, that the food insecurity will be in need for long term to come, and the DAV wants to be able to provide that service. With this bill, it allows me to not invest money and resources into hiring more staff to build this and help me make sure I do it right, but to partner with people that already have team that already specialize in that, get the data, get the information from them, I roll out the program, keeping the cost down to the minimal amount so the money that we do raise, I'm able to provide more food for these veterans.
Thank you. Discussions, Chair Bliss.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I like the idea and concept of this bill. Anytime we can get government to be more efficient is a wonderful thing, and leave it up to the veterans to take the initiative, so I appreciate that. I do have a concern with the bill, however, as written. On the handout that you've given us, it says that it's non-monetary resources, but the bill just mentions agency resources. So I'd like to have our nonpartisan staff just address that through an amendment. We can lay it over, bring it back the next time. I think if we address that in an amendment, there'll be no problems over here. I really do appreciate the effort, though, and thank you and congratulations for coming up with this initiative.
Mr. Kill?
Thank you, Chair and members. I think, if there needs to be comfort language added into the bill, we're happy to work with the legislature to make sure that it's crystal clear that we're not talking about moving dollars. That's not our intent.
Representative Olson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Kelly, during the conversation that we've just had here, it sounds as though we have members or people, employees at the department who have copious amounts of time that can be allocated towards this. Is that doesn't sound like that's the case, right? This is just to make things more efficient. We're not actually having people sit around looking for things to do, and now we're saying, hey, we don't know if we can help out this. We've got extra time on our hands. You don't have employees who have copious amounts of extra time on their hands, do you?
Mr. Kelly.
Chair, Vice Chair, no. So our intent in making this permissive is that, if we're approached and there's an overlapping synergy or, force multiplier through a public-private partnership to what we're actually currently doing, we want to try to do that. So the staff that have been working on this with the DAV are already working on food insecurity. They're already working on the core program and the stuff that the legislature's already added them to. This is just like an extra meeting here and there trying to help coordinate. Our staff are not sitting around looking for stuff to do. They're plenty busy.
Representative Wilson.
Perfect. Thank you so much for that answer, Mr. Kelly. Now, we have a lot of trust in this department. We don't have a lot of trust in other departments in the state of Minnesota's government. So with that being said, how can we know for a fact, how can we trust this department when they say, next year we're not going to ask for more full-time employees on our budget because this has now become something that we're doing? How do we ensure that this is always and forever, when we have extra time, when we see synergies, when we see ways that we can make this government work for the people, that happens? Because like I said, there is a lot of trust that we have in this department, and there is very little trust that we have in other departments in our state.
Mr. Kelly.
Mr. Chair, Vice Chair, so I think you're spot on in, if you look at the executive order that was signed by the governor on Veterans Day, and I was part of the many deliberations as you draft an executive order, Commissioner Lindsay made it very clear internally that we are not creating a new program here. And the goal here is to bridge past what we have now on food insecurity. So as members recall, we extended the life of several one-time grants for food insecurity for the folks that testified here at the top of the hearing. But that funding is set to expire. And our hope is that we can, and again, going back to what we talked about, in a time of a tight fiscal environment, we see the same forecast data and everything that you all do. We're looking at how can we feed veterans in a way that isn't a government program? How can we partner with Tom Lyons from Military Radio and the DAV and our staff to feed vets and not have a new program? So this is permissive. The executive order was drafted to be permissive. This is not trying to create a new program. This is actually trying to leverage public-private partnerships past when these dollars that were appropriated towards veterans' food insecurity would expire. So I hear you on that. I think, you know, we're not trying to have mission creep here. We're trying to keep this to basically have our staff be the experts and help this in its incubator phase, for lack of better words. And then I think there's a scenario where this goes beyond even our staff helping out on it. I mean, right now we're also grateful for the opportunity for an additional work therapy opportunity for our domiciliary residents to help fill the boxes. We have some available space at Hastings to take some point in time donations and build the boxes there. This is about leveraging our people, both in our residents in the work therapy program and our experts, but it is not about creating a new program at MDVA.
Representative Wilson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, for this gracious extra time. I love it. Theoretically, this sounds like a wonderful program, wonderful opportunity for us to really make things work. In the Army, we have this conversation of trust but verify. We have a lot of trust with you. If we can get some language, like Chair Bliss said, that can help us ensure that we have verified that this is not going to increase any costs. We're not using dollars that are allocated by the state, and we're not creating full-time employees to do something that they're not actually, like that wasn't the determination of this program to be. I think it's a great idea. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Any further, Mr. Kelly.
Just to put a finer point in, and I want to note, we have built into this bill a reporting structure, so if we are using this authority, you're going to hear about it annually, and you know, so there's also built, it's not just you gave us this and we wander off and we do, you know, stuff. Like, we are going to come back and you're going to see a report on what we're doing under this authority, just to be as transparent as we can. So I just want to put that point on there as well. Thank you, committee.
Thank you, Mr. Kelly. Any further discussion on the bill? See none. Closing statements. Representative Ray Rauer.
Thank you so much, Chair, and thank you so much to committee members. I appreciate your questions. I think I'm good to say that we, for all of you, that we're happy to resolve the issues and concerns that you have and get the bill in good shape. I think ultimately this is about saving money, being able to utilize expertise that's already there to get a program going that has the external dollars and support. So thank you all so much.
Thank you, Representative Rayar. We will lay over the bill for hopefully you can work with our Chair Bliss to get language in there and bring the bill back. Next is House File 3741, the one and only Josiah Hill from Stillwater, Representative Hill. Representative Hill, would you like to move House File 3741 to be re-referred to the General Register?
Yes, Chair, that would be the motion.
All right, to your bill.
Wonderful. Well, what we have before you here today is a technical cleanup bill that was offered and described to us by our friends at MDVA. And it closes a rarely utilized and woefully small, it's a $250 educational benefit for POW MIA dependents. And I just want to point out to the committee, as this was a major point in our last bill, that the appropriation for the GI Bill, which includes the surviving spouse benefit, is built into the state statute. So this would not require any new spending or need any additional stops. I did trade messages with Co-Chair Rarick in the Higher Ed Committee, and she indicated that it did not need a stop there. With that, I would turn it over to Mr. Kelly for additional explanation.
Welcome back, Mr. Kelly. Please identify yourself for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Thank you, Chair and members. Good morning. Again, my name is John Kelly. I serve as the Director of Government Affairs for the Minnesota Department of Veterans Affairs. I want to thank Representative Hill for carrying this bill for the department and for the committee for taking the time to hear it this morning. House File 3741 is an MDVA policy bill that seeks to modernize statutory references for veterans higher education programs that exist in Minnesota Statutes Chapter 197. Minnesota veterans and their families have seen several changes to higher educational programs since our statutes were last updated. This bill makes important changes that will result in a more simplified benefit application and administration process. It consolidates the seldom-used state soldiers assistance program veterans education benefit. This one-time benefit was once the only available state education higher education benefit. It has been surpassed at the state level by the Minnesota GI Bill, first when it was passed in 2007 and then when it was increased in the 2023 session to $15,000 lifetime. There were changes to the post-9/11 GI Bill, where it is now the forever GI Bill. So it does not expire. My GI Bill benefits, I left about 8 months of eligibility on the table because I stopped going to school. I would not qualify for this program. The way that the law is written for the one-time benefit, veterans have to have completely exhausted their other funding opportunities. They cannot have a penny left of GI Bill or any other program. So it's extremely hard to qualify for. We've paid out three of these in the last 5 years, and we believe that in addition to the two veterans-related programs, with the passage of North Star Promise, veterans are people too. There really is not a need for this program, and we want to clean it up off our books because it's extremely hard to qualify for. We still have to plan to administer it, and we want to clean up our statutes. Secondly, it changes and consolidates the surviving spouse and dependent education benefit. As Representative Hill mentioned, we have two different dependent benefit programs under SSAP. There is a POW-MIA, spouse and dependent program. This, we have not, as far back as we can track, paid this out in over 15 years. Most of the folks that would be eligible for this, the veterans were World War II veterans. We did not have a high number of POWs in the follow-on conflicts. So what we want to do is be ready in case there is a future conflict, God forbid, that has a number of POWs. We want to keep this eligibility in place in statute, but we just want to consolidate it into the existing spouse and eligible dependent program. So we're not changing anything else on the spouse and eligible dependent program. We're simply consolidating that POW-MIA criteria into the one program so that there aren't two. And then the rest is some clarifying statutory authority and technical and administrative reporting. So we, because of the creation of the Minnesota GI Bill and the Veterans Education Program, and then the existing benefits having been part of the state Soldiers Assistance Program, we basically have two teams touching veterans benefits. The effect of this bill would just consolidate it into our one veterans education team. So the goal here is clearer statute, clear to follow for veterans and their families, and a consolidated program. We also have some reporting data in there so we can track better graduation data for veterans from MNSCU and MnState and the U of M. And that's the bill. We ask for your support.
Any members of the public who would like to testify? Seeing none, any discussions? Okay, seeing none, Representative Hill, any closing comments?
Just want to thank Director Kelly for his hard work on this, and see this as a good bill for Minnesotans and veterans' families to streamline and simplify our process. Thank you, Chair.
All right, Representative Hill renews his motion that House File 3741 be re-referred to the General Register. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion carries. The Bill 3741 is re-referred to the General Register. That concludes our agenda for today. We'll meet next week, Wednesday, March 11. Thanks, folks. We're adjourned.